The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 80 of the Canes Cast, and you know what?
What?
We've got to know the rules.
I think I do. I've read the rule book from front to back. That's a lie.
Yeah. Why? You're starting us off with a lie.
I've admitted to it right away.
Well, look, I have not read the rule book front to back, but I have read the rule book.
I don't think many people have.
I don't think the NHL has.
Yeah.
But I have been to many broadcasters' meetings and things where the NHL holds seminars and they try to explain the rules and here's what goes on. So I'd love to tell you that I have a firm understanding of every rule in the rule book, the pertinent ones.
Yeah.
But I'm going to put this out there. Not even the league does, because the way that they have written a lot of these rules, I feel like we've done this before. They leave so much gray area for calls. And I know that some people kind of like that, that they don't want things to be just totally black and white. They want to have the referees to have some control of the flow of a game. And I get all of these things that come into play here. But the one thing that needs to be absolutely 100% set today, and I think I've said this before and I'll say it again, the league is not out to get you. They're just not.
No.
Everybody likes to think it. They're not. But let's get to it. Why do we have this set up, Michael? What's
going
on?
Hi. Welcome to episode 80 of Canes Cast alongside TV's Mike Maniscalco.
And he's the Web's Michael Smith.
Thank you. We're coming to you midweek this week. Game day on Monday in Colorado, the usual day that we put out Canes Cast. It'll be Monday the rest of the way, but we just had to push it back a few days because of game schedule and travel and all that. The Hurricanes, since we last came to you, playing four games, winning two of them, getting a point in Boston, and then we'll talk about that game against Winnipeg. We'll talk about it briefly and move on. Wow. But yes, earlier you were referring to rules and officials and rule books and interpretations, and I think there were a few instances in this last week where that sort of took center stage and there was a lot of confusion, and rightfully so.
Yep.
And I think we've got a good handle on what exactly happened. And in we should note that in the case of what happened in Nashville, that's obviously what we're talking about, Mikhail Granlund's goal late in the third period. I think there was 2.5 minutes left.
It made it 4-3. The Canes were up 4-2,
right,
and his goal made it 4-3.
What happened was extremely confusing, but the NHL did get it right. And I know there were a lot of questions about what exactly happened, the process of it all, how Nashville even challenged. We'll go through all of that, but the league did get it right. It just it was a confusing way to get there and left everybody sort of puzzled.
It was the explanation.
Yeah.
Not the final result, but the explanation as to what was going on is what was confusing for everybody.
And
the players, the coaches, the fans, the broadcasters. It's a rule that could be settled tomorrow, black and white, but they leave it gray, and I'll get on a soapbox about it in a minute, sweetie.
Well,
but
there are gray rules in every sport and every league, right? I mean,
yeah.
NFL and the catch. I feel like they've done a little bit of a better job trying to really define exactly what that is.
They clarified their unclear rule from a few seasons ago.
And maybe the NHL will take a page out of that book and clarify goaltender interference more. Maybe. I don't know. Because there are still a lot of questions about what is and isn't goaltender interference. There's a lot of gray area with the way the rule is written. It's rule 69, by the way.
Nice.
There's a lot of gray area with the way the rule is written that basically leaves gives the on-ice officials a lot of latitude in deciding what is or isn't incidental contact, what is or isn't preventing a goalie from being able to do his job. There is a lot of gray area. But in the case of what happened in Nashville, they did get it right. It just took – there was a roundabout way to get there. But we got to the – at least in terms of the process – the correct result. And so really what happened, here's what happened. We'll talk through it. Ryan Johansson passes the puck to Mikhail Granlund in the slot. He shoots the puck. The puck goes in. Right before that happened, Jordan Staal was jockeying with Brian Boyle in the slot. And Jordan Staal is a strong man. Brian Boyle also strong, but yes. Jordan Staal
two strong individuals.
Yes,
skating hard, going strong to the front of the net.
Yes, and Jordan Staal gives Boyle enough of a nudge, you know, sort of an upward nudge to upend Boyle, and he goes look kind of dangerous. Skate first into Mrazek's groin area. Mrazek totally fine, by the way. The officials on the other side of the play, so
Steve
he doesn't
Kozari.
See the puck go into the net. Yep. The puck does indeed go into the net. The overhead review, the overhead camera clearly shows that. He doesn't see the puck go into the net. He blows the play dead. So the initial on-ice review then is to determine whether the puck went in the net or not. And that's easy because the overhead view shows, yes, it did go into the net. It should be a goal. So they reach that conclusion. That's the initial review. Then Steve Kozari informs Toronto that he has no goal because of interference with the goaltender.
Yes.
And so that's when he makes the announcement, and the announcement
after
he
review.
Made. Correct. After review, there is goaltender interference, no goal. That confuses everybody, I think, because the initial review wasn't for goaltender interference. It was for whether the puck went in the net or not. It did, but his view that there was goaltender interference means no goal.
But he didn't see the puck go in the net initially.
Correct.
That's why they went to Toronto. Did the puck go across the goal line? Yes, it did. Then the referee goes, well, I have goalie interference on that, so therefore no goal.
And we should note that
look, he's a person. People misspeak all the time.
Right.
We know we do it on this podcast.
Oh, all the time.
But you're trying to get this call right. You're trying to get the game going. You don't want to delay the game any further than what it's already been delayed, trying to determine what the call is. And it was just, if the refs were guilty of anything, it was a poor explanation.
Right.
Or a miscommunication.
Yeah, a simple miscommunication where he probably needed a sentence more to really explain
yes.
what was going on. And the NHL, we should give the NHL props in that using the mics in I don't know how many seasons it's been since they've started announcing penalties and reviews and such, it has helped the process of further explaining the reasoning of things. It could still be better. I feel like the NFL is really the gold standard of, after they come back from a review, explaining exactly the reasoning as to why a call was upheld or overturned. But the NHL has been better. In this case, it was a simple case of he misspoke. You know, he said after review, goaltender interference. The initial review isn't for goaltender interference. And the Hurricanes actually had, you mentioned before the podcast earlier in the season, an instance where in Anaheim, there was the initial review was to determine whether the puck went in the net or not on Greg McKegg's goal. And then Anaheim challenged for goaltender interference. And there's a two-review process, and it's kind of convoluted, but it's just because goaltender interference is something that's reviewed upon a coach's challenge. So that's why you have this sort of drawn-out process. Maybe it, or maybe not, it doesn't make sense. Who knows? Maybe it's not the most efficient, but that's how it's set up. So the initial review determined that, yes, the puck went in the net. Steve Kozari says, I have no goal because of goaltender interference. And then Nashville is indeed allowed to challenge that call. You can chat whether it's goal or no goal. You are allowed to challenge the ruling of goaltender interference when the puck goes into the net.
Yep.
So Nashville does that. They take a look at it. They say, no goaltender interference. It's a goal. That's when you can debate, okay, is it or is it not goaltender interference? By today's standard, they probably made the right call. But at the same time, because there's nothing Brian Boyle is going to be able to do to avoid Peter Mrazek. But at the same time, there's nothing Peter Mrazek can do to not get bowled over by Brian Boyle and not be able to make
all
the save.
So whenever you're watching a play like that,
yeah.
I try to do the break it down into, okay, is it intentional interference? Was a player being pushed in? Or was there just no interference whatsoever? You know, it's just how you look at it, because the goalie wasn't going to make the save anyway. If you look at it, those things. And then one of the things, it's a little exercise. It's not the best thing in the world to do. But could Brian Boyle have stopped if Jordan Staal wasn't there? Yes, I think he could have.
Yes.
But Jordan Staal was there. They were in a battle to get to the front of the net. And Jordan Staal. Now, Jordan Staal didn't commit a penalty.
Correct.
He's just trying to get position to keep Brian Boyle from being able to get a rebound or, you know, create havoc in front of the net. And as Jordan Staal, as you've already explained, Michael, comes up because he's a strong man.
Big man.
Brian Boyle's going forwards, but now he leans backwards. Now he's taken off of his skates. There's nothing Boyle can do to avoid the contact with Peter Mrazek. So, seeing the contact was caused by Jordan Staal taking Brian Boyle, not illegally, but trying to take him out of the play, it's a good goal because the contact that was created by the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
So it's a goal. And I know that people don't like that, but if the circumstances were reversed, wouldn't you want the call to go your way? If you're saying, oh, well, that guy pushed my guy, and that's why he hit the goalie. That's what happened in Nashville.
Yeah.
It just was the way it was presented from the official. And I'm not lambasting him for this because, again, you're trying to get the call right and quick and get back to the game. But go ahead and explain it. Say, we went to Toronto for review. They called goal. Call on the ice was goaltender interference, therefore no goal. Nashville is now challenging the goaltender interference.
Yeah.
And that's how you can explain it, and it's easy for us to do it how many days later of, oh, isn't it simple to say it that way? But
yeah.
That was the whole issue with all of this. So anybody who is upset about it, here's the bigger picture. The Canes won the game,
right.
5-3.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that goal did not result in anything other than Sebastian Aho scoring his 30th goal of the season in an empty netter, which Nash probably would have pulled their goaltender anyway down 4-2 late. But that's really the end result is the 30th goal of the year for Sebastian Aho, and the Canes skate out with a 5-3 win in a game that they had to show up for. I'm not going to say win, but had to show up for because of the game they played the night before in Raleigh against Winnipeg.
Yeah, absolutely. We can circle back around to that now and just basically say that it was just one of those. The games like that happen.
Yes.
They happen to every team. They happen to the 05-06 Stanley Cup champion Carolina Hurricanes team when they got beat 9-1 by the Atlanta Thrashers. Now the Winnipeg Jets. And the Hurricanes got beat 8-1 by the Winnipeg Jets on a night where they just didn't have it right from the drop of the puck. And that was the simple thing. Winnipeg got a lead early. They built on it. They held on to it. And then they just poured it on late. And the Hurricanes were embarrassed in their own building. Unfortunately for Curtis McElhinney, who's been brilliant, he had to just eat the brunt of it because of the back-to-back situation. The Hurricanes were going back to Peter Mrazek the next night in Nashville. Rod Brind'Amour not wanting to put Peter Mrazek in there and expend his energy, so Curtis McElhinney just had to eat it, unfortunately. And you know, his stats take a beating for that. That's the unfortunate part of that. But the Hurricanes the next night respond. They answer the bell. And that's what they've done this season, each and every game, where especially coming off a loss like that, they respond by bouncing back. And they bounce back in a huge way, beating a team that was jockeying for first place in the Central Division.
What if I told you that the Tampa Bay Lightning lost a game this year 7-1, and they lost it to the Arizona Coyotes?
Oh.
They did. Does anybody think that Tampa Bay isn't going to be a really serious Stanley Cup contender because of that loss? Now, if that loss happened yesterday, people would freak out because it's the latest thing that we've seen, and, oh, my God, they're not ready. What's wrong with them? That loss happened on October 27th.
Oh.
So
that was ages ago.
Doesn't even count. Might as well have been last year. Again, you never want to lose a game 8-1.
Correct.
And I'm not going to do the whole, oh, here's the good thing about it. But if you were paying attention, the head coach was saying it. The Canes were not playing very good hockey, but they were finding ways to win. And here on the Canes cast, the Web's Michael Smith and I were pointing those things out. Like, hey, good teams find ways to win when they're not at their best. But the Canes really hadn't been at their best for a couple of games. And you can say they were getting away with things. Like people like to say that. I just like to say they found a way to win when they weren't A+. Well, they weren't A+. They weren't A. They weren't even a B grade against the Winnipeg Jets. And I think it was sometimes a slap in the face with a wet fish isn't a bad idea, because maybe the team goes, okay, we gotta wake up. This is unacceptable. Yeah. And to a man, that's what they said after the game. And they came out with a huge performance against Nashville. And I'm not going down the road of, oh, it was good to lose 8-1. But ultimately, folks, it's one loss. That loss doesn't count for four in the standings. It counted as one. And for Carolina, they didn't have time to sit on it. They went out the next night, played, and they flushed it. They totally left that game in Raleigh against a team that needs to win, that wants to win, on their home ice, who's one of the best in the West. And then they backed up that performance with another good performance in Colorado. So for anybody who wanted to do the hand-wringing or say, oh, I knew it about this team, everybody has a stinker. Everybody has a game where they get beat bad in the National Hockey League because of whatever reasons. The team could have the flu, or you could be missing six guys from the lineup, or you could be perfectly healthy and just take a night off. You know, have everybody picks the wrong night to not play well. And that's what happened in that Winnipeg game.
Yeah.
The top six, in most notably, the line that gets the most minutes, the Sebastian Aho, Justin Williams, Nino Niederreiter line, they were a combined minus 15, Michael.
Yeah, that's not great.
No, not at all. Yeah. And then they come back the next night and get four goals and an assist, and they're a plus five against Nashville. So
yeah,
they answered, as you said, they answered the questions and the bell like they have all year long.
The only way that Winnipeg loss becomes a problem is if it starts a bigger slide of, you know, where the
if you
team
lose to Nashville and Colorado, because you can't get that out of your head. And they had just lost in overtime to Boston in a game where they had a 2-0 lead. So you're sitting here going, you can't go on a losing streak now. This is the total wrong time to do it.
Yeah,
they didn't. They put the brakes on it. It was, you know, 0-1-1-2, which people want to call it a two-game losing streak. That's fine. That's because that is what it is. You lost two games, but you got a point.
Yep.
But no, they came back and they answered the way that they have all season long. And now a five-game homestand that I think at the end of it, we're either going to know, are they firmly in or are we still fighting the fight the rest of the year to get into the playoffs?
Yeah, and that comes after Friday's game in Columbus, which is going to be humongous now considering, you know, last night's result, Columbus winning, and they're, what, 2 points behind the Hurricanes in that second wild card spot. The Hurricanes in the first wild card spot, Pittsburgh in the third spot in the division. And it's been like that for weeks now, the Hurricanes and Pittsburgh sort of jumping in and out of the third and first wild card spots.
Which, by the way, even though Arizona handled Tampa Bay 7-1 this year, as we've chronicled, I don't want to see the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round of the playoffs.
No. No, I don't think anybody does.
No.
I mean, I guess the same could have been said about the Washington Capitals years ago when they would just tear through the regular season and sputter out in the first or second round. But there's something different about this Tampa Bay team, I feel like.
Yeah. I think last year they were good and they got beat. You know, it's not like this was the first year we've seen them be good. They've been good for a couple of years now, really good last year. And this year it's a historic season.
Well, they got beat last year by the Capitals team that was eventually going to figure it out. Yeah. And
they did.
And they did.
All right. So there's that. We've gone over the loss. We went over the no goal, which then led to a great effort in Nashville for a win. Is there any more that you want to go on that Nashville game that we want to get into, other than how the top line responded when they needed to?
Yeah.
And Sebastian Aho, hey, you got 30 goals now. Welcome to that plateau.
Yeah, he's got 30 goals for the first time in his career. So everything from here on out is just going to be building on that now career high because he had 29 last year. I think we probably both predicted he'd score 30 this year. The Hurricanes have, between him, Justin Williams, and Nino Niederreiter, three players who have scored 20 goals this season. They've got Andrei Svechnikov at 17, Ferland at 17, and Teravainen at 18. So they're knocking on the door of potentially six players who could score 20 goals in a season.
What do you want to call Nino Niederreiter? Because he's got 20 goals, but 11 of them are with the Canes in a short amount of time.
Well, see, that's the thing. So he is a player on the roster who has scored 20 goals.
He's that's why I'm asking.
I think you have to count him as a 20-goal scorer. 11 of those have come with the Hurricanes.
He scored 11 goals in, 23 games?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll count it.
He's a 20-goal scorer.
He's a 20-goal scorer.
He just wasn't with the Hurricanes for all of those goals.
Not all, but
most.
It's more than half. So
I would give it to him.
All right. Good with you on that. And Justin Williams, what more can we say about the captain this year, who not only leads through his words, he leads through his actions. And, you know, we can talk about turning back the clock for Justin Williams this year. He's got 45 points, 20 goals. Seventh time in his career, he's notched 20 goals.
And
I don't know how many,
three or four of them have come after he's turned 30?
And I don't know how many people had him for 20 this year, but
I don't know if I did.
I think I had him between 15 and 20.
Yeah, close.
But he's there, and, man, he has been on the power play. He's been a demon with 9 power play goals, well, getting to the front of the net. But he's just been perfect for this team.
What's been, I think, most interesting to me is just how perfectly the Nino Niederreiter acquisition really just gave balance to the forward group. Yep. Just subtracting a player from the fourth line and adding a player to your first line, and all of a sudden Justin Williams fits in with those two perfectly. And that's a line that hasn't changed in, what, 2 months? Really, yep. The whole lineup from top to bottom, minus, you know, rotating a few guys in and out of the lineup because of the healthy extra, there hasn't been a lot of changes to the forward line. Even the defensive pairings haven't seen a lot of changes because Rod Brind'Amour and his coaching staff have just found a system that's been working, combinations that have been working. And Nino Niederreiter has been exactly what the Hurricanes were looking for on that line, giving Sebastian Aho a winger who can finish, who goes to the front of the net, who can clean up the rebounds, all of that, and who has a great shot, as we saw in Nashville, being able to toe drag to the middle of the ice and just beat UC Saros with an absolute laser of a shot.
And to the access we get, a perfect fit for that locker room as well.
Yes, and a pretty good interview, too.
Yeah.
He talks really fast.
Yes, he does. But he is able to command an entire hour of Kane's Corner that he did.
And I know last week we said we'd get him on the podcast.
We're trying. We're
efforting. There's no practice today. We'll get him one day. This will become a running thing, and next year we'll be like, we'll have Nino on the podcast someday.
What, he's our Matt Damon?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Coming up next, the Nino Niederreiter interview.
All right, so let's move on to the Colorado Avalanche game where Peter Mrazek stole the show. Oh, and mind you, the Carolina Hurricanes won 2 games on the road in Nashville, in Colorado, against physical teams that can play heavy. And they did it without Michael Ferland, who'd missed a few games. We'll talk about the injuries in just a second after this. But Peter Mrazek, who wanted to prove he could still be a number one goaltender in this league, and we've chronicled it. Everybody talks about it. He takes the 1-year deal to come here to Carolina. That performance against the Avalanche is as good of a goalie performance as you will ever see. And he made 38 saves, and the Carolina Hurricanes skated out of Colorado and had a 4-point trip, beating Nashville and beating Colorado. And that's after, as we've already talked about, that 8-1 drubbing at the hands of the Winnipeg Jets at home. So they answered in a big way, but Peter Mrazek really has stepped up his game. People wanted to say exactly when. I've tried to argue this, and let me know if I'm off base. Peter Mrazek has been playing the same way all year. He really has. It's just in the beginning of the season, the Hurricanes were only scoring 2 goals a game.
Yeah.
And Peter Mrazek was giving up 3, but he was making big saves to give the team the opportunity to tie it or stay in the game, but it just went by the wayside because the Canes were only giving up like 25 shots, 26 shots, and he was giving up 3 goals, so the save percentage would be down.
Yeah,
but now he, along with the Canes' offense, team scores more goals in front of the goalie makes timely saves. Goalie wins more games.
Yeah, and the Hurricanes have been playing with a lead a lot lately, too. I mean, if you go back in the last probably 2 months, I think there have been 2 or 3 games maybe where the team hasn't scored first, and so they've had that advantage from pretty early in the game, and that makes everybody more comfortable, I think, including the goaltender.
But if people just listen to what I was explaining, and perhaps I was trying to explain a no-goal call there, what I'm trying to say is Peter Mrazek has really been this good all year.
Yeah.
And if you're just one of those people who goes, numbers, 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 well, the numbers don't look it. They're starting to look it now.
Yes.
But he was this good early on in the year. He really was. He was making big saves. He was making that clutch save in a close game to give his team the opportunity to win. And now he's doing that when, like you said, the Canes have a lead. So you notice that big save even more than when you're trailing 2-1, where you're like, you can dismiss it because if you lose the game – well, how big was that save? It was big for the guys in front of him. They understand it. I'm just trying to say he's been this good all year, but now everything's fallen into place for the Canes. And it's been because Peter Mrazek has been this good. Curtis McElhaney had been that good. The guys are not worried about what's going on behind them for the netminders. But Mrazek's performance against Colorado, if he doesn't get a first star or a star of the week nomination from the National Hockey League, I got nothing for you.
He might. Well, I don't. The Hurricanes only play twice, and he's probably only going to play one of those games. So we'll only have two games. He's probably going to get not nominated for a star.
That Monday performance alone.
Maybe he gets a shutout whenever he plays next.
Either Columbus or Buffalo.
Yeah.
Well, trust me, if they play him against Buffalo, he'll go back-to-back shutouts right now.
I think the week goes Monday to Sunday or something for the three-star thing. I don't know. It's whatever.
He's got one.
Yes.
See, whatever. But he was brilliant against the Avalanche.
He was. And
he was brilliant against Nashville, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he robbed Colin Wilson about 35 times, it felt like.
Colin Wilson has got to be super frustrated because he had some excellent chance, none better than the chance that he had. A little two-on-one rush. His initial shot has stopped. He gets in place and gets a pass from I don't know who it was, but off the rebound. And he basically had an empty net, and Mrazek sprawls out with the right pad just enough to get it, and then the stick coming through to sweep the puck basically out of harm's way and stunning the Pepsi Center crowd because probably should have been a goal.
Yeah, the Avalanche forward had five shots on goal, and I would say three of them were
at
grade
least three.
A.
Yeah, at least so, three.
Whatever.
All
sorry,
in the third period,
sorry,
too.
Sorry for you, Colin. Good good for the Canes.
Well,
though.
Every time I saw the press box in Pepsi Center is way back in the corner, and all three of those plays happened in the third period, so it's at the opposite end
of
the
ice. So
they
were right in front of me because I'm right on the goal line there.
So, every time I'm sort of squinting to see the number of who it was, I'm like, wow, nope, that's Colin Wilson again.
Yep.
Every time. All three of his grade A chances in the third period. Oh, okay, Colin Wilson, stoned again by Peter Mrazek.
In the words of one of my friends who I used to play floor, street, deck, whatever hockey you want to say, so he told somebody, go home. He just ruined your day. Sorry, Colin.
Goaltending has, as a whole, been the difference, I think, for the Hurricanes in the new year. Well, the whole season. And this isn't a like it, take it, if not, send it back. We'll get to that in a bit. But I think it has been the defining difference for this team. Now, yes, in the new year, the team has found a way to score more goals. Their shooting percentage has gone from like 6.5 to 11, and that's that's more normal than you'd expect from a 6.5. But the main difference, I think, this year is just having two goaltenders, and Peter Mrazek and Curtis MacLean, who have stayed good for the team, have stayed healthy for the last couple of months. Having two goaltenders who are going to bail you out when there are breakdowns, and there have been breakdowns. There were breakdowns in Colorado, obviously. Peter Mrazek was there to make the save. I think that's been one of the biggest differences this year for the Hurricanes, in that they've just been able to roll with either of those guys on any given night and get the same performance, albeit in two very different ways from both goaltenders.
Yeah, I won't disagree with that, but I think it was the team that was shooting 700 times a night and not scoring goals, finding a way to score goals.
Yeah, you knew that was going to correct itself at some point.
But not to this pace. Yeah. Michael, since December 31st, they've scored the most goals in the National Hockey League.
Right.
That, to me, has been the difference.
And
for
so that
team
might, at some point, slide back down a little bit to it, but it's not going to slide back to what it was before December 31st, which was just an abysmal, not in any way representative of what you're going to normally find, shooting percentage of 6.5. That's just statistically significant in that it was so low.
Yeah, but that to me has been the difference.
Yes.
I mean, the puck's going in. Because you were right, the overall arc of the season is Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhaney have been very good. First time in the franchise's history they've had two goalies win 16 games in a season or more. And right now it'll be more for both of them. But that's, Michael, we've talked about this for a long time. That, to me, was what has been missing from this team for years. The other goaltender. The other guy who can come in and play 35, 40 games if you needed to. If you want to talk about a 50-50 split for goalie. But they never had that other guy who they could consistently count on to get them wins. And now they've got two goalies who they can consistently count on to give them wins.
Yeah.
It's been a big, big difference for this team, along with the goal scoring. That's it for me.
Yeah.
And it's not a like it, take it, like you said. But it was a good question. You should have used it as
well. Well, I've got one.
I was impressed. Really?
Mm-hmm. One that I came up with, too. and one that somebody gave me. I've got to find. I don't know where it is. I'll have to dig it up.
All right.
Well, but I do have one original.
All right. You know what? We're jumping the gun because we've got an injury update that we've got to get to.
Okay.
Anything on Calvin DeHaan that's out there? And again, there's no practice today as of the recording of Canes Cast episode 80. But Calvin DeHaan, and this goes back to a rules question.
Yes.
Because Calvin DeHaan took a high stick in the Colorado game, and it was on a follow-through, and it was nasty. And Calvin DeHaan, it was up in his eyes. It got underneath his shield. There's a lot that goes to it. But Calvin DeHaan flew back with the team from Denver, which that alone for me was a great sign.
Yes.
That he was able to come back. But other than the statement issued by general manager team president Don Waddell, there's no current update at this moment that we can give you on Calvin DeHaan's situation.
Correct. That's basically all we know. He sustained a right eye injury, went to the hospital, was further evaluated, did fly home with the team. That all was good to see. I think he's going to miss some time. I mean, obviously the
team...
They
said he's going to miss some time. They've called up Hayden Fleury on an emergency recall.
Correct. So we might have a better idea of that when we talk to head coach Rod Brindamore on how long it's going to be, if it's going to be a week, if it's going to be 10 days, just how long it's going to be. But the Hurricanes, I think, are going to be without Calvin DeHaan for a little bit. But the good news is that it doesn't appear to be serious. And that is great news, really, considering when you look at the replay and... It's scary anytime you see that happen, and he's had it happen twice this season. He's been very unlucky. But to see, you know, the stick blade go underneath the visor, catch him in the right eye, like, it could have been a lot worse. And that's not to say it isn't bad. It's still bad, but it could have been worse. And thankfully, all signs are that he's going to make a full recovery.
Well, the good news in the statement from Don Waddell is it is progressing as the team would have hoped.
Yep.
So, again, he'll miss some time, but Hayden Fleury has been good this year when they've needed him in that role to come in and play, and he'll be on the 5-6 pairing with Trevor Van Riemsdyk. They
he'll
have good
right
chemistry.
In.
And that's the thing this year, too, for the Canes. They have some depth. But let's get to the incident. Is it a high stick? Yes. Now let's go to the NHL rule book. Is it a penalty? No, because it's on a follow-through. And yes, you have to have some care. You can't be reckless with your stick. And this is something where Tripp Tracy pointed out in the broadcast where I wish the NHL would change the rule completely, because you should be in control of your hockey stick at all times, follow through or not. Now, there are instances like everything, like boarding penalties now. Did a player turn his back at the last second when he gets checked?
Yep.
You know, there are certain things where when guys get hit, they put themselves in an awkward position. So, but if it's a follow-through and your blade of your stick or your stick goes above your shoulders and you make contact with somebody in the face, I don't care if it's a shot or not, that should be a penalty. And this goes to the rant I was going to get on here with the rule book. It was a reckless play. And, yes, players have to be responsible for what they do. But the follow-through rule gives the benefit of the doubt to the player, to the offender.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some penalties that get called because of the result, not because of the penalty. And I know, look, we are just fortunate Calvin DeHaan is going to be okay from what we've been told.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody more fortunate than that than Calvin DeHaan, which is a good thing. My problem with this rule is – you don't want guys to be careless with their hockey stick at any point for anything. Now, if Calvin DeHaan slid on the ice and a shot came through and he got clipped with a stick, that's not a penalty if he's on the ice. He's put himself in harm's way. Here he didn't. You know, this is just – I know you're trying to score and follow through. Call it a penalty. It's a high stick. It's a two-minute minor. I mean, it should have been four because it cut him.
Yeah.
But – just, you want guys to be careful. You don't want incidents like that to happen. Then just say it's going to be a penalty, period. If you catch a guy in the face or in the neck with your stick, that's a two-minute penalty. And if you draw blood, it's a four-minute penalty. And if it's a follow-through or not, and I don't care if people don't like that rule, just you got to be careful. All right, sorry, you can't wind up with a clapper from 5 feet in. You got to go with a wrist shot. Well, then go ahead and do that. But you've got to be responsible for that. And the NHL leaves wiggle room in so many of these rules, Michael. And that's what bothers me. That on that high sticking, should it be a penalty? In my estimation, yeah. Because it's a player, while he's following through, he is being careless because he's not aware of his surroundings. So that should be a penalty. So the NHL, you've got a rule that's got a bit of gray area in it. Just take the gray area out and make it, if you make contact with an opposing player's face, head, neck, that's going to be a high-sticking penalty. Sorry if it's a follow-through or not. And I know I'm trying to go black and white, and it's the same thing with goals and goalie interference. I've gone down this road again, but I'll say it. There's a real easy way to do this. If you make contact with the goaltender in the blue paint, play stops, period. Yeah. I know you want to get more goals in this league, and that will cut down on probably 25, 30 goals, maybe more in the NHL. Probably a lot more now that the way that the game is played.
Probably.
But don't make it this gray, murky area where nobody knows what's interference. Just say it quite simply. If you make contact with the goalie in the paint, if you're in the paint and you touch the goalie, play's dead. Period.
Yeah.
And then if you want to get into the difference between incidental contact, which is you get pushed into the goalie,
or did the goalie initiate contact?
Fine, yeah. But the play is dead.
Yeah.
Play is dead. Now, goalies are smart.
Right.
They'll start. But you just make it pretty simple. If the goalie gets bumped, you're going to blow the play dead. And if you get pushed in, no penalty. If you do it yourself, 2-minute penalty for goalie interference. End of the story. Now, I'm leaving it the other way, though. If the goalie's out of the blue paint, and you nick him, it's not free run. Not free. I'm not trying to
game on.
I'm not trying to create chaos. But
roller derby.
If he takes himself out of that space to try to make a save, get in his way.
Yeah.
Sorry. You're out of the blue paint.
There are going to be complications any way you slice it,
But at least that's a little bit more black and white.
That's
you can look at it and say, "Oh, he's in the blue paint." No. "Oh, he's out of it." Okay.
Yeah. Goalies would definitely take advantage of that.
Oh,
for sure.
Yes, they would. But players would take advantage when goalies come out.
Yeah.
I'd get in his way. But then again, that becomes an interference call, so you got to be smart about it.
Yeah.
That's all. It drives me crazy.
But yes, by the letter of the law, that was not a penalty the other night in Colorado.
Because it was a follow-through. It was a follow-through.
But the Hurricanes scored like a minute or two after anyway, so, and they won the game. And Calvin DeHaan is going to be A-okay.
Yeah.
So all works out in the end.
All right. And now with that,
if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
So circling back to what I was talking about earlier, 20 goal scorers, the Hurricanes currently have 3. We're putting Nino in that category because he has scored 20 goals in the 2018-19 season. 11 of them with the Hurricanes, 9 with the Wild. With Teuvo Teravainen and Michael Ferland and Andrei Svechnikov all knocking on the door, and Jordan Martinuk from maybe a farther perspective, he's got 15. He's 5 away with... what, 13 to play, I think?
Dougie Hamilton is 13 away. He's got 13. He's 7 away.
7 away.
He'll get to 15, by the way.
Will the Hurricanes have 6 20-goal scorers? And I looked, and this will make an appearance in tweet mail later today. The last time they had 6 20-goal scorers in a season was the 06-07 season.
So the year after they won the Cup.
Yes. Justin Williams, Ray Whitney, Eric Staal, Eric Cole, Rod Brind'Amour all scored 20-plus goals. They've got 3 now. They're halfway there.
You're missing a couple of guys on that list.
No. Justin Williams, Ray Whitney, Eric Staal, Eric Cole, Rod Brind'Amour.
That's 5.
Oh, excuse me, Scott Walker.
Thank you.
I was blending the 21 with Andrew Ladd's 11. Scott Walker had 21.
I was going to say, you said
Sorry,
6, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure you shorted us there.
I missed one. There have been seasons since that there have been 4. They haven't had 6 since 06-07. There's a chance to get there this year. Do they have 6 20-goal scorers?
The Michael Ferland health status is the only thing that makes me send it back.
Yep.
I think they'll get 5. All right, mark me down for 5, but 6. 6 is a 6 is a tough number. I want it, believe me, want to keep it, but I'm going to send it back.
And real quickly on Michael Ferland, we were talking injuries. He didn't go on the trip to Nashville and Colorado. He suffered an upper body injury in that loss to Winnipeg. He stayed back in Raleigh. obviously, we don't have any further update because he wasn't on the trip. Team didn't practice today. We might get further word tomorrow. Maybe he skates with the team tomorrow. We'll see. He's had a nagging upper body injury for a while. I don't know if this is the same thing or something different. We really don't know a whole lot, but he's been going through some nagging upper body ailments, and this is the latest and what's kept him out. And hopefully he can get back into the lineup soon. But Andrei Svechnikov jumping into that second line role with Jordan Staal and Teuvo Teravainen has done an excellent job and had a great game in Colorado.
Yeah, and we have actually a question about that coming up.
Okay.
From the listeners of this fine podcast. Mine for you involves the number 20.
Okay.
But it's the goaltenders.
Ooh.
Peter Mrazek has 18 wins. Curtis McElhaney has 17 wins. Will both goaltenders get 20 wins this year?
Oh, wow.
That's a good one. Nobody saw that one coming.
So Mrazek would need two and Mac
Curtis would need three. Yep.
Oh, boy.
Because now we're getting into how many starts each guy gets.
Right, exactly.
So there's 13 starts left in the season. So I would imagine the way this is gone.
And there are two back-to-backs left.
The biggest split we would see would be 9-4. One guy plays 9, the other guy plays 4. I think we're probably going to see more 8-5. That's probably more realistic. One guy plays 8, one guy plays 5. But wouldn't be surprised if it goes 7-6.
That's a good one.
I know.
I'm going to send it back just because.
Oh, you non-believer, you.
Mrazek's going to get there, I think. Oh, Mac's probably going to get there, too, now that I think about it.
So keep it.
Mm.
So say they do the 8-5 split.
Yep.
Curtis McElhaney's got to go 3-2.
Which I think is reasonable.
Yes.
Okay, I'll keep it. I've talked myself into keeping it. It is going to depend a lot on the splits. There's two back-to-backs left, so you're going to have each goaltender split starts there. And then it's every other day, really, from here to the end of the season. Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance. I wonder what the last time that's happened.
220 win. They've never.
Yeah, never.
They've never.
Yeah,
you,
never.
You answer your own question.
Franchise history.
Thank you for listening here on the Canescast.
Thank you for paying attention to what the stats say.
You did, but yeah, first time ever they've had two goaltenders win 16 games in a season.
That would be wild.
And then what? I backed up your story arc for the season.
And I know I'm putting the cart before the horse here, but then what do you do in a theoretical first round of the playoffs? Has a team ever just been like game one, one guy, game two, the next?
Take a look at 05, 06. I don't ever remember a team where they switched
just rotation,
a goalie
right.
every game.
I think you just have to ride whoever's hot.
Yeah, 05, 06, that's what the Carolina Hurricanes did with Martin Gerber and Cam Ward.
Yeah.
So, and the Canes will have that luxury where if they feel that one guy's a better matchup, they can go put him in. I don't want to make this a like it, keep it, but you've got to start one, bench one,
ooh,
and cut one. Stealing this from
it's a family-friendly version.
From the Rich Eisen show, exactly. The Canes are in the top three in the division. The Canes are a wild card team, and I know the one that you're going to cut. The Canes do not make the postseason.
We'll cut that one. What are the other two options?
They're going to be a wild card team.
Well, what are my options? What can I do with them?
You start. Start.
Okay, start.
Bench.
Start,
cut.
Bench, and cut. Gotcha. I'm going to,
top three in the division.
Yeah, top three in the
wild
division.
Wild card or miss out.
I'm going to bench wild card because obviously the preference would be top three in the division, and I'm going to start that. And there's, I think, a good chance of that just because of the remaining schedule and the head-to-heads yep. the Hurricanes will have. You got to play Pittsburgh twice. You got to play Washington twice. Both of those teams currently you're chasing in the standings. And if you can get points out of those games, there's a good chance you can at least top over Pittsburgh
yep.
for that
third spot
in the division. So, yeah, I mean, the chances seem all right for that.
All right.
What about you? Would you take the same?
I would start, just for it's more definite, I would start the wild card.
Yeah.
I would bench the top three.
Well, we're talking at this point in time where the Hurricanes have and at least an 80% chance, if you look at the mathematics, of making the playoffs. So it would have to be, the Hurricanes can almost play 500 hockey from here on out and make the playoffs. Now, that's probably the difference in drawing Tampa Bay in the first round versus drawing Washington or New York, team like that.
Or Pittsburgh.
Or Pittsburgh. So there are some more, we'll call them desirable options, to where you don't want to just limp into the playoffs. And obviously you don't want to just limp into the playoffs. You want to continue playing at the pace you've been playing at for the last 2.5 months. And I see no reason why the Hurricanes can't keep it up. I mean, it's a tough schedule down the stretch because of your opponents, and it's a grueling schedule because of the every other day. The Hurricanes are going to play their last 11 games in 19 days. It's pretty compact.
Yeah, it's every other day.
Every other day with a back-to-back thrown in there. Now, and that back-to-back's both games are at home, so it's not really even that challenging. But it's going to be a grind right to the finish, and positioning is going to come right down to the finish. Ultimately, I think this team is going to make the playoffs when you look at the probability of everything and the way they've been playing. But where they fall in the standings is going to come right down to it.
Trust me, I'd like to start the top three, but I'm going with a sure thing, and this team is a playoff team.
That's fair.
For the like it, keep it, was it from Jason Bennett who had your suggestion about the goaltenders?
Maybe.
You want to read it? You want me to read it?
No, I don't have it, so.
I got it right here.
Okay.
Here's your take it or throw it back question.
Oh, take it or take it or throw it back.
The Hurricanes will sign Mrazek to a three-year-ish deal.
Three-year-ish.
And bring McElhinney back for one more year before bringing up Alex Nedeljkovic. I don't know.
I might throw that one back.
I would throw that one back too, because
I'll send it back. I won't throw it. Throwing it seems violent.
To throw it back. We're going by Jason's rules here. So I'll throw it back just because I think that if it gets to July 1st for both goalies, somebody's going to make them an offer, like a really big offer.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But the Canes are in a really good spot
because
I'm pretty sure that they got the inside track to keep both of them if they want them.
Yeah, you've got good options.
That scenario is likely. I'm not saying that that's a no. Oh, how dare you? It's possible, but there's a lot of human factors that come into play. You know, agents, other teams, what the team values with Alex Nedeljkovic as well.
Yeah.
So a few things that are out there. But that was a good question. Thanks a lot, Jason. Glad you could contribute. We do have some questions, Michael Smith, if you'd like to get to them.
Sure.
This from Josh Holdner, who I believe continues a streak of 80 episodes of asking a question.
I think so.
Before he even knew we were doing this.
He's even got one in for episode 81 already.
Yeah. If and when Canes make the playoffs, will John and Tripp be on the calls? First round series. The regionals or the local areas do the first round, and then the second round it becomes national broadcast. Good news, folks. That means John Forslund will be calling a lot of Canes hockey games if they make it to the second round as well.
Now, does that also mean that some first round games can be national broadcast, right?
Yes.
So if it's like a Sunday matchup or something and the league wants to put that game on national TV, that can happen.
They would, of course, I think it matters who they're playing.
Right.
That's got a big part of it, and like who the broadcast team would be. Because I'm not sure if Tripp would be able to work the national game just because of how they've got their analysts set up. And that could be something where, you know, a national broadcast wouldn't want the play-by-play group of one team.
Right.
They'd want to split it up.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, you can always tune in to find out. And
yes.
I can't wait to find out. This from Matthew Herman. When Michael Ferland comes back, does Svechnikov get displaced from the second line?
Well, displaced sounds like we're
moved,
sending him out to
pasture. No.
Well, good luck, kid. Here's a blanket and some displacing him. Yeah, I mean,
we're not moving him out of his home.
I think he probably goes back to a line with Lucas Walmark and Jordan Martinook.
Yeah.
I mean, not that that's a bad thing. That trio's worked well all season. But that's, you know, again, this is a good problem to have in that the Hurricanes have depth. They have options. They have players who can move up and down the lineup and play with almost anybody. But that'll be something that gets tackled at some point. Again, we don't know the status of Michael Ferland or how close he is to returning. It didn't sound like it was going to be too serious last week, but you know, things change, and we don't have an update to pass along just yet. But if I had to guess, yes, I would think Ferland slides back into the second line with Staal and Teräväinen. But that's only a guess.
Yeah, it'd be my guess. This from John Herring. Need your help. Finally able to purchase a Hurricanes jersey, and I'm torn to which name number I should get. I'm leaning towards Niederreiter, Aho, Williams, Ferland, and Mrazek. That's going to be hard to fit all of those names and numbers on one jersey.
Yes.
I would just pick one.
I'd be impressed. Wouldn't even be mad.
Yeah. I mean, if you could.
If I'm picking one, Sebastian Aho.
Yeah, if I had to pick one, yeah.
That's going to get you longevity for sure.
I would think so. They're all great choices, by the way.
Yeah.
So
all good choices.
But I'm with Michael Smith. If you're gonna just have to choose one, Sebastian Aho is the guy who I think that you would look at. Also, I want to thank Adam Steltenpole.
Ooh.
Brett
what a
Pesci.
Last name.
Brett Pesci is averaging 0.89 points per game ever since Mike Maniscalco, that's me, sorry, interviewed Bradley Pesci during the game. Before that, Brett was averaging 0.29 points per game.
Wow.
So people want me to add, you know, interview Brad Pesci even more.
The power of Brad.
Yeah. So I'll do what I can.
Brad, if you're listening, we're available.
Yep. This from Karen. Hey, guys. Hope the trip home was good. It was.
It was. It was lovely.
For better
for
than
the trip home. Yes.
Better than going to Colorado for one of
Colorado.
Us. What's the hashtag to submit questions, and which one of you can they be submitted to? Thanks. They can be submitted to both of us. Hashtag is CanesCast.
Or Canes Cats, if you want to send us pictures of
cats wearing Canes gear. I'm not a fan of that, though.
Canes Cats?
No,
or
dressing,
wearing...
dressing up pets.
Oh.
It's just me.
Yeah.
I'm not. It's weird.
No, that's fine.
Not like if you put like a scarf on it, like, you know, a bandana or something.
Yeah.
But like when you're putting like full on rain gear on dogs, and I know wet dogs smell terrible.
Yeah. And
I get it.
My dog doesn't like to be wet, period, which is strange because he's part lab at least. At least that's what we were told.
All right. Well, whatever, man. I got a cat because my wife likes cats.
And you don't dress up the cat.
No, I don't. Not at all. No.
Who likes cats?
My wife. My wife. Who? My
wife.
We haven't had that drop in a few weeks. I've missed it.
My
wife. Well, there you go.
Had to get that one in there, right under the buzzer.
So when you get home, who's the first to greet you?
My dog.
All right. That seems like a fine spot to end episode 80 of the CanesCast. Denver, the Sunshine State. Gorgeous. Canes got a 3-0 win thanks to Peter Mrazek. Just recapping the week. A statement win against the Nashville Predators. And maybe a wake-up call in that loss at home against the Winnipeg Jets. And either way you look at it, it's worked out fine. As of the recording of this fine podcast that we are always appreciative that all of you are listening to, the Carolina Hurricanes are 2 points out of the third spot in the Metro Division, which is an automatic bid into the NHL playoffs, but they are occupying the first spot in the wild card, and that is a good thing in a huge game on Friday night in Columbus that we will be talking about on Monday.
Because they lead the Blue Jackets by 2 points.
By 2 points, but game in hand.
Game in hand.
Which, as I always say, only matters if you win it.
And it's Columbus. I can't really figure Columbus out. I don't know if they've figured it out just yet. But, that game Friday is the biggest game of the season.
Yeah.
Until Saturday, which then biggest game of the season and yada, yada, yada.
I do have a question for you, and it's probably the worst way to end this CanesCast because I would like to get more on this. But as far as the trade deadline goes, maybe this would be a question for next week, so a cliffhanger. But I'd like to see the NHL move the trade deadline.
Earlier or later?
Make it earlier.
Okay. Like the NBA's is earlier, right?
Yeah.
It was 2 or 3 weeks earlier?
Yeah, I would like it to be the first week of February.
Okay.
That way you get at least 20, 25 games of the players that you trade for.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure Columbus would love that.
I'm sure everybody would love that. Yeah. Although what it does is it forces teams to decide quicker. Are you in the race? If you're, and you're not, and then you've got February, March, and then the few games in April. So you're telling your fans if you sell the first week of February, hey, we're out of the race.
Right, and then that's a tough sell after that. And but maybe you see less activity because teams don't really know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, but it's just one of those things that we could kick around.
Worth considering.
Maybe later, put it out there. We haven't said hello to Bill Burniston in a while. So
hi, Bill.
Hi to the strength and conditioning coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, who's done a fantastic job this year. We haven't talked about food enough. But
no, that's
we
okay.
couldn't on this trip
we'll leave
anyway.
That one off.
No, we're gonna let that go. But we are going to Columbus, and you know what that means on Friday. I hope you're ready for it.
I plan on being ready for it.
Hot Chicken Takeover, if you're listening, we're coming. Thank you. That'll do it for episode 80. We did have background music tonight, not sure if you could hear it or not.
It's the most bumpin' luncheon that I've ever seen.
And on that note, for the web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you on Monday.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.